Welcome to the latest Watercolors Aquarium Gallery podcast brought to you from the Aquarium Studios in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Today we are talking about one of the coolest groups of animals on the planet.
Yeah, definitely. Store favorite and just like, just a general animal favorite.
They're amazing. Misunderstood, beautiful, majestic.
So much fun.
So much fun. We're talking about sharks. Specifically, we're going to get into sharks in the aquarium, but we're going to definitely talk about just some general cool stuff about sharks.
Definitely.
They're worth it.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to start off really quick with just store news and maybe some Q&A type stuff? I don't have any Q&As from our listeners, but we might be able to talk about interesting stories around the store, something like that to start off with.
I think the big news is that the coral table is finally up and running.
Oh, yes.
Bum, bum, bum.
It looks as cool as we wanted it to.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Not that I was worried about that, but right. Oh, that's amazing. I'm so excited about
that. We were
that.
Not let down.
No.
We got the Mobius app running on the Ecotec Radeon XR 15 Pro lights, 6 of them. It's flowing down into the basement where all the filtration is, and it looks sweet. Gotta come down to the gallery and check it out.
That whole saltwater section is just looking so badass now. Yeah. Cool. All right, let's get moving on sharks.
Let's get talking about sharks. So,
I should say that if you want to send in a question, because we did not have one this week, you can send it to podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com. It doesn't have to be limited to this subject. It can be any subject, and we'll talk about it on the air.
Perfect.
Cool.
Sounds good. So, sharks.
Yeah, what about them?
So, I want a really big, mean, nasty fish, and I want it to be able to eat anything.
Yeah, that'll fit in a 55.
No.
So, I think the first distinction that needs to happen when we're talking about sharks is the requiem sharks versus the non-requiem sharks.
Yeah. And I think the distinction needs to be here more about like breathing apparatus, because requiem now refers to a specific group of sharks, and that doesn't encompass all ram ventilators.
Oh, good call.
So,
yep.
But in the aquarium hobby, typically when you're dealing with a ram ventilator, it's usually a requiem shark.
Perfect. So that is one of the significant differences in deciding whether or not a shark is appropriate for a home aquarium or even some of the public aquariums. That ram ventilator is how they breathe, and moreover, it's how they rest.
I think that's probably one of the questions like on our sharks I get the most is, oh, don't they need a circular tank because they need to keep swimming? And if we had a circular 360-gallon tank, I don't think that we would be able to keep the types of sharks that need to keep swimming at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The big deal with these ram ventilators is they need to be able to get into a glide, because that is actually like A, how they breathe most efficiently, but also they do kind of get into like, in order for them to, they don't have a true sleep mode mm-hmm. in the sense, because the part of their brain always needs to be on, but they do need that glide in order to
rest.
Yeah.
Rest, I think, is the best way to say it that I can think of.
So yeah.
The way to put that would be, I guess, that as the shark's moving through the water passing over its gills is what's providing it its oxygen.
Right. Yes.
And it's not exerting any effort because it got up to a certain speed and is gliding.
So cool.
You know what's something really like fascinating about that is there are some species of sharks that can kind of like switch hit. And the species who do that, they spend less energy when they're moving than when they're sitting still, because like the actual effort of pumping water through the gills is more than the effort of swimming.
Oh, right.
So the benefit of that would be like staying at a really good feeding ground instead of having to drift around, kind of. Why would you rest instead of moving if it was easier?
Yeah.
Are white-tip reef sharks one of those?
They're one of those, and then lemon sharks.
Okay. White-tip reef sharks, I know, hide during the day. And they come out and feed at night.
In their little snuggle piles?
In their little snuggle piles. I know. I actually got to witness one like in person down in Hawaii, and it was incredible.
I've seen your pictures. That's what I think of when I think of a bunch of sharks lazing around.
Four of them with their tails sticking out of a cave, and they were in the roughly 3 to 4 foot range, white tip reef sharks. They were amazing. I never actually got to see their faces because
Just the tails.
Just the tails.
You didn't want to like just jam yourself in that crevice with them and take a nap?
I really wanted to grab on and pull it out, but I figured that might be a little intrusive.
I don't think they would like that.
No.
Yeah, then you might actually get bit by a reef shark.
Yeah, don't piss off the sharks.
My cat would bite me if I pulled its tail too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the non-RAM ventilators, the most famous one that most people have heard of, most people have witnessed if you've seen a shark, is a nurse shark.
Yeah.
And they have an active breathing thing. What's that called?
Buccal pumping.
Buccal pumping.
You made that up.
No, it's actually the term.
What does buccal mean?
Mouth.
Mouth? Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense. I guess in other languages, that's like the root of it.
Yeah.
Is that Latin? I don't know.
Yeah. So like a cichlid, they talk about the buccal cavity that where they hold the eggs.
I don't know. I've never done much with mouth brooders, so I actually did not know that.
Yeah, so for like these sharks, the mechanism they're normally having is they're creating a vacuum in the back of their mouth or in the front of their throat, and that's what's pulling water in, and it goes through their gills, and then they keep... That's why they kind of like, if you watch the bamboo sharks, their throat like swells and then unswells. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's like super obvious when they're stressed out a little bit. Like when we moved them, it was like huge. But is that a different mechanism than just your average fish uses to pass water by their gills?
Yes and no. It's a similar pathway, but for most fish, what they're doing is so they have like these opercular coverings on their gills, and they can actually like move those to get water through them.
Oh, I see.
The flexing of the gill plate.
Yeah.
As that comes out, it causes a rush of water.
Versus the suction in the mouth and throat.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
Wow. Sharks are amazing. Every part of them is just so interesting.
And so why do we care about that? The reason is because of the size of the tank.
Yeah. The same size shark, whether it's RAM ventilating or not RAM ventilating, is the difference between like a 400 gallon tank or a 20,000 gallon tank.
The statistic I heard, and you know, it was on the internet, so it must be true. And I think I read it somewhere. But it's something like a 4-foot black tip reef shark needs 75 feet of swimming space to get up to glide speed and effortlessly drift to get proper rest. Anything less than that, and they are exerting themselves too quickly, whether that be turning or maybe even following the contour of an oval aquarium, but 75 feet is the number that I've heard.
No.
So we get that question like, hey, I want black tip reef sharks. Sure. Build a 75 foot aquarium and I will get you black tip reef sharks.
I will also pitch a tent in your living room.
Right.
So I guess would the other factor just be the size of the actual animal itself? Like what is the smallest RAM ventilator? You mentioned a lemon shark, but that's still pretty big,
that's
right?
A big shark. They get like 8 feet long.
Yeah, probably a bonnet head.
Yeah.
Those max out at about 3.5 feet.
Okay.
Yeah, for a male. The females can get a little bit chunkier.
I've never heard of that in an aquarium,
they look like
I don't
miniature
think.
Hammerhead. They're adorable little sharks.
But I don't think I've ever heard of that in an aquarium.
They're not particularly common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big part of that is hammerheads don't always adapt well to aquariums. They go through like this weird, if they get too stressed out, they'll start doing this like arched back thing. And then they'll slowly just like over the course of days spiral out. Right. And as far as hammerhead goes, bonnet heads are by far the easiest to work with, not just because they're small, but they're least prone to that behavior. But they're still a hammerhead.
There's a whole lot going on in that sensory organ that gives them the shape of that head. That moves those eyes.
I'm sure even like the vibration of our pumps and stuff like that stresses. Yeah. But like the point being that there's really no, this is the small, easy alternative to the black tip reef shark.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're working with that shark, I think an appropriate size tank for that is still in the like 25 foot long range.
Yeah.
Massive.
Right.
Way bigger than people put in home aquariums.
Yeah.
And you still got to account for the fact that these things don't typically turn on a dime. So like the width of that is also still going to be a good like 15 feet.
Probably three times body length so that they have enough room to turn. And I'm kind of making that statistic up. But
it's enough to, if that really sounds like something you can do, you're putting in way more hours of research than we can give you in this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Well, fun. What are the sharks that we can keep then? Maybe those we should talk about ones. That.
The buccal respirators?
The buccal pumpers?
Right, that's what I said.
Yeah. I'm going to start off with my personal, like, I consider it to be the best aquarium groups of sharks are the epaulettes. Mm-hmm. Because they are true, like, tide pool sharks. So that, like, that smaller enclosed space doesn't bother them.
They can handle it. They appreciate it.
And there are, like, a couple different species you can work with. Mm-hmm. There's the standard.
Right.
And then there's, that would be Hemiscilium oscillatum. And then there's also, occasionally you can get the Hellstroms or Hellstorms. I can't remember which one. And then like a Trilineart, which is a little bit harder to find, but those are probably my personal favorite.
Yeah, going back to the tide pool thing, not only space-wise, but water quality-wise and oxygenation, that'll make them a little bit hardier too.
There's going to be fluctuation that happens in tide pools, yeah, so for sure.
Not that we would want to plan for dirty aquariums, but when you're working with big predatory fish, there's a lot of food that goes in there. So that wiggle room of, oh shoot, they didn't eat this. That's not going to crash your entire tank and kill your sharks necessarily as much with a tide pool animal.
Yeah, I kind of want to harp on that mentality a little bit here because we have three bamboo sharks in what is a 360-gallon tank. I would never recommend someone try that at home because we have that plumbed into a 1,200-gallon system and we still struggle to keep the nitrates down in that system. Be conscientious of how much waste these things produce because
these are large animals.
If you want that, like if you wanted two of them in a 400-gallon tanks, I imagine you would have to be able to pull off like a 50-gallon water change every like 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
I said 50-gallon, didn't I? I meant like 50%.
I would say 50 gallons a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we were talking a little bit earlier about how it seems like people are really into stingrays, and I think that's because they can do them fresh water.
Right.
And you can manage that much easier in a freshwater tank. But going for the extra volume makes, in some ways, keeping salt water and doing big water changes a little easier. You can mix an entire barrel and you can set up auto water changes for that 50 gallon.
Right.
Where you, if you had a 75 gallon tank, not that we would ever advocate putting a shark in there, you might need to do that manually. In a bigger tank, you can change bigger water volumes more passively.
If somebody ever wants to come check out our mixing system for 50-gallon batches of salt water, it's pretty slick.
Yeah, and so simple. I mean, it would be like flipping switches back and forth. Right. That's why if I were to set up a saltwater system, it would be a big one so that I didn't have to mess around with little water changes. They're more work.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yep.
So don't let just the salt of it intimidate you because there's ways to make that easy.
Yeah.
Salt water is not hard, and maintaining good salt water quality for a shark is not hard.
You just got to be willing to plan ahead.
It's got to be big.
And it is a little bit expensive. Those big water changes definitely will add up. Then you get to have a shark.
Yeah.
And I was like, and this is also accounting for the fact that like, in the previous podcast, we've talked about, all this equipment stretches between your water changes. We're including that in this calculation already.
Yeah. Right, so epaulettes. Epaulettes are also just the cutest things.
They are. Have you ever seen? Oh, you have. We had to have one
we
in
had
the store.
A 12-inch juvenile.
Yeah.
So cute.
A large part of the appeal of epaulettes to me is that they have the most developed pectoral fins in sharks, and they do a true walking with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like a baby epaulet just kind of literally waddling along the bottom of the tank, that's their preferred, unless they're in a hurry to get somewhere.
Yeah, like they can like hop up to a cruise, but it kind of, but most of the time they're like running around like little chubby kids.
Yeah.
If you want to see the extreme example of that, watch the Blue Planet 2. There's a little segment of that of one that's cruising from tide pool to tide pool, and they do that little walk around. Pretty cool.
Also, if you want to look up like baby epaulette sharks, go to the Tennessee Aquarium YouTube channel, and they do have videos of their baby epaulette.
Oh, I haven't seen that. I'm going to have to look it up.
That's another really cool reason to keep epaulette sharks is they're the most readily available captive bred.
Mm.
Funny how that works.
Great point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
What's your next favorite group?
The bamboo sharks.
The bamboo sharks, for sure.
So the bamboo sharks are in the same family mm-hmm. as epaulette sharks, but they are a different genus in right. the family, and they're a little less specialized for the tide pool environment. They're more geared towards, they would in the wild be living inside the coral structures. So the again, the confining space isn't mm-hmm. so spooky to them, but they're not as used to small bodies of water as an epaulette.
Right.
And they're
water
not
quality
as
quality matters a little bit more.
Yep. But they're a lot of fun. They're I have a soft spot for bamboos because my undergrad research project was on bamboo shark embryos.
Right.
So,
not to mention our store pets are three bamboo sharks,
yeah.
and they've been some of the more rewarding animals I've worked with. And you know, fish get such a bad rap. I've worked with reptiles, birds, mammals considerably, and those sharks are definitely just as personable, just as intelligent, just as rewarding to train and be around and interact with. They love people. They come up and greet you when you come up to the tank. I can't really say enough about how fun those fish are to have. And like, note that not once in any of that did I mention how aggressive they are.
Right.
Because they're really just not that aggressive.
Yeah, people are like, oh, they're big, badass fish. And I'm like, I mean, they're badass, but not in that way.
Yeah. They're badass in what amazing animals they are.
People keep using that word. I do not think it means what they think it means.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, those three, they get along just fine yeah. with each other. With fish, you have to be very cautious because they're predators, just like you would have to be cautious with any other predatory fish.
Although I'd honestly be more worried about a fish hurting them. So like the type of fish that they wouldn't go after would be things like butterflies, mm-hmm. angels,
triggers,
things that pick at rocks.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We're going to get into a lot of detail about tank mates with sharks, but let's keep going through.
Oh yeah,
species.
Let's go through. Okay.
Yep. Sorry, I'm just flipping through because I lost a name of a shark that I wanted to
talk about.
Oh, we
should name drop our shark book then while you're flipping through.
Oh, sure. Yes, the best shark book that I know of is Aquarium Sharks and Rays by Scott Michael.
I've had my copy since like 2007, 2008.
Oh, you got a new copy, huh?
Yeah, I did.
What I love about this book is that it's so realistic.
It is. He talks about how good of a captive shark a nurse shark is. If you're willing to provide a 14,000-gallon aquarium, nurse sharks are great.
That's why they're in pretty much every public aquarium.
Yeah.
Well, they're in every public aquarium because the actual story is like in the 80s and 90s, people tried to keep them and realized they would get too big.
Right.
And for a while, public aquariums were taking them in. And then like simultaneously, they all were like, all right, we're going to stop doing that. And that's why if you go to most aquariums now, they don't really have young nurse sharks. They have like the old geezer nurse sharks.
That doesn't mean you should buy a nurse shark just to donate to an aquarium when it gets big. I just had a conversation like that. I did not like it.
Aquariums do not want your fish.
No.
They very carefully plan their tanks. They quarantine everything for months because these are multi-million like right. displays, they're not going to risk it. Just
you are not making a donation. You are surrendering something you are no longer capable of caring for.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically you are using their resources to care for an animal you bought.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we were going through the species of bamboo sharks that are great. There's one that I really want to mention that I hope someday we figure out how to keep, but the Hassluyt's bamboo shark. The males max out at 17 inches.
Wow, that's tiny.
We got one in a number of years ago, and we actually had a red-tailed shark in the shop that was bigger than the baby Hassluyt's bamboo shark. Everything that I'm reading, and I know the fate of the shark that we got in, I have not found any record of anybody successfully keeping them for longer than a few months. And it's one of those that we just don't know why. We don't have that unlocked. There are a couple of other bamboo sharks that are close to that size range. But for some reason, they present some challenges that we haven't gotten past yet. the banded bamboo sharks and the white spotted bamboo sharks.
They're bulletproof.
They're bulletproof. They're so amazing. Yeah. So I need to throw that in about the bamboo sharks to.
Yeah. So then we have that context.
And when you're talking about epaulets, you can pretty much talk about the genus. The genus for, it's Kyloskylum for the bamboo sharks. There's a little bit too much diversity in that genus to use those kinds of generalities.
But if we're harping back to the epaulets, the nice thing is that they do have varying sizes. So you can kind of like pick one and more or less their care is the same, but like, I want one a little bit bigger. I want one a little bit smaller. You can make that decision with epaulets.
Right. One of them maxes out, I believe, at 2 feet.
Yeah. That I think that's the Hellstrom's.
Yeah. And some people say that a 180 gallon aquarium is big enough for that shark. And with proper filtration, I think I wouldn't disagree with that. I think you're yeah. okay.
I think maybe I would say the display.
That's a good distinction.
Because I still think you'd need a massive sump.
Big sump, big protein skimmer, big mechanical filtration that's maintained on a regular basis.
A big ball of macroalgae.
Yeah. Something like that. Everything you can throw at it, pretty much.
Yep.
I mean, like, if you contextualize this, like, paraclownfish, we've pretty much said minimum tank size 20 gallons. So that's basically max 6 inches of fish in 20 gallons. If we scale that up to sharks and say, 180 gallons is enough to keep this clean, that scale does not match up.
That's a clownfish in a 2.5 gallon.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yep.
The amount of waste would just be way too much.
Right. You're going through your groups.
Yeah, that's
about
where my experience ends. I don't know. What's your
next favorite group?
Let me grab the book real quick.
Because I got a couple more groups. I mean, we can't forget Wookiee.
No.
Oh, true. I shouldn't say that. Wow, I did forget Wookiee.
I'm not sure Wobegons are going to be my next group, but they might be.
Maybe cat sharks?
No, I would do. Yeah, Wobegons are next.
Are we going in order of
Charles's
desirability?
Charles's favorite. As in, but I am ranking them based on like how easy I think they are to work in tanks. Yeah. The nice thing about Wobegons is I think they are very durable. Mm-hmm. The trouble spot with them is they cannot turn for crap.
Right.
So you need a tank that is wide enough to accommodate a fish that needs a little bit more than its body length to turn around in.
Picture a big, clumsy mouth.
Yes.
That's pretty much a Wobie.
Mouth plus a big bulbous stomach.
They sleep for about 2 weeks. They wake up for about 15 minutes until they get fed. Then they go back to sleep.
This is a shark that like a lot of people are like, it's not very exciting. And I'm like, it's not. But it's fascinating because this is by far the most extreme example of a shark that has perfected the lifestyle of, I'm going to look and act like a rock. Right.
And for all intents and purposes, sometimes may as well be a rock.
Yeah.
But the charisma of that fish cannot be underestimated. Right. And she is sassy.
Yep.
She was giving me the business earlier today.
Yeah, she will. Like, you can just, she doesn't make an expression, but you can just see it on her face when she's disappointed with you.
Yeah. One of the biggest challenges with keeping a northern Wobegong or any of the Wobegons is tank mates. Her mouth is so big that she can eat something kind of the same size as she is.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably an 18-inch fish with an 8-inch mouth, 10-inch mouth.
I don't know.
It's huge.
It's big enough that she could, I would worry about her with our other sharks.
Yeah.
We keep her by herself.
And some of those sharks are almost twice the size of her.
At least, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have a pretty strong mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we got her, we were told of a condition in some of the coastal Australian hospitals where wobies are found, and it's called wobie hand. It means you have a wobie stuck on your hand.
Have I ever told you what the catch method for Wobegons in the wild is?
No.
You poke them with the broomstick so they bite it.
Oh, and they don't let go.
Right. And you can just take them out.
Well, can they let go?
They can, but they're definitely one of those like, I'm going to get this.
Yeah. People make it all the way to the hospital with the Wobie still attached to their hand.
That's amazing. I believe it. I've seen her eat, and it's very dramatic.
It's impressive.
Talking about like the vacuuming ability, like a like in the throat. I think Woebegones are by far the most extreme example of that because she can truly suck things into her mouth. Like I have to be careful of how I hold the forceps feeding her because if it's the right angle, she can it in a little bit and it gets a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
What species of Wobies are there? I know ours.
That's the Northern or Ward's Woebegon.
Okay.
Yeah. The Northern is the more common name. I'll say Ward's because the species name is Wardi.
Yeah, the Ward's is what I was thinking when you said Northern. I was like, I must have it wrong.
And it's definitely one of the smaller Wobies. And I think maybe even the smallest. Definitely the smallest available.
It's definitely the smallest of the ones we can find. You can argue like maybe the Cobbler Woebegon, but I have never seen those ever anywhere.
Some of them will get into the 4 or 5 foot range. And those are obviously not.
And you need to be cautious because like ornate Woebegons, at least like 20 years ago, were by far the most common one. And that's the one Woebe that can get like 8 feet long.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
It's a monster fish.
But my personal favorite species is the tasseled Woebegon. And this is the shark that really leans into that. Like I'm a rock to the point where, so Woebegon actually, the story is that it's an aboriginal word that means beard.
Oh, right.
So,
totally makes sense.
Tasseled Woebegons, the little, like, what would I want to call them? Like phalanges on the face.
I wish you could see the gestures he's making to demonstrate a beard right now.
they're not really like whiskers, but they're definitely like little, like filaments.
Yeah.
With tasseled Woebegons, they're actually like to the point where it looks like it's seaweed coming out of its face.
Yeah.
And I'm handing Amy the book so she can see this.
Ah, yeah, it does. Oh, that's so weird. That looks like a puppet.
Yeah.
Like Jim Henson would have made that.
For sure.
Yep. That's so weird.
And this shark is also an angler. Its tail is modified to look like it has an eye spot on it, and it will flip its tail up over its head and wag it so something big enough to eat will come by.
That's shocking. I've seen, again, a Blue Planet where the one Woebe is getting... like flashing its tail around, and it looks fish-like, but that one looks like somebody just like stapled a lure on it.
Yeah.
That is such amazing adaptation all the way around. And I think that's probably like part of what really endears me to the whole group of Woebegons is they're just so specialized and unique and special.
I once had a customer come in and he saw Wookiee downstairs and he goes, what's special about that? And I said, well, this is kind of like the aged scotch of sharks. And then his wife goes, ooh, that was a burn because he's a scotch guy.
Perfect. Well, you know, maybe he just needed to be educated. He could come around.
Yeah. The tasseled Woebegons, I will say, get like 4 or 5 feet. So it is a larger one, but given that it's a Woebegon, I think that's still a doable shark. You just have to specially build a tank with those dimensions in mind.
And really specially build the cave that fits in the tank with those dimensions in mind.
You're still talking about a footprint, though, of probably 4 feet by 6 feet.
Yes. And I'm like, that's doable in a home. It's not like 75 feet.
That's people are doing that for their arowanas, and I really think this is a better aquarium fish than that.
Yeah.
I like that point, Amy. I think that's well said.
Because, you know, that... an arowana does not spend its entire life in a footprint like that, but a Woebegon might spend its entire adult life in one cave.
Yeah, if it's a good enough one.
Yeah.
So a little thing about safety when it comes to Woebegons, and you know, everyone has this image of sharks in their head. Not everyone, because we don't. We know better. Many people have this image of sharks in their head of these really scary things that you got to be really careful of. A Woebe is not going to attack unless it thinks your hands are food. And they're kind of a motion predator.
They don't have great eyesight. They're very nearsighted.
Yes. So this is one of the sharks that we are very, very cautious of whenever we have to stick our heads in the tank. With our bamboo sharks,
this is not the pet and cuddle shark. The bamboo sharks, they love to be pet and you can.
Yes.
The Woebegong.
Nope. No.
Keep your hands away.
And the nice thing about them is they're not very fast. So when they get up and moving, you're like, all right, well, it's coming.
Speaking of speed, you mentioned that they're not very fast. They're not very fast
swimming
until they strike.
Yeah, the strike is like half a second, if
so
that.
When we first got Wookiee in, and she's this amazing creature, and Charles was all excited about getting this shark in. He's like, "Can I be the one to feed her first? Can I feed her first? Can I?" And I'm like, "Of course, go ahead and feed her." So we got the feeding tongs out, and we got the silver side out, and Charles knows about sharks, and he knows about wobies, and he grabbed the silver side by the tail, and he waved it down in front of Wookiee's face, and that strike was so hard and so fast that Charles jumped off the stool he was standing on.
I'm pretty sure you squealed like a little girl.
I 100% did.
Yeah.
Like, let's not lie.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So and it's still almost as startling single time.
Even when you know it, it is so fast.
Mm-hmm. It, like, you blink, and, like, it's gone.
Right. Right.
Or she's clamped onto the forceps and then you're like, oh crap.
I think we've got a video of it on our.
Yeah, we must. We I'm going to have to dig one up because yep. I know we have a slow-mo and that's really what you need to see how much the extension is of that strike.
Right. Yep. So check out our YouTube channel and it's probably somewhere on one of our Facebook pages or our website. What's your next group?
My next group is, I think I would say the cat sharks then.
I would agree.
The advantages, they're generally smaller than the other groups we've talked about. The disadvantages, they're true nocturnal sharks.
A lot of the bamboo sharks are technically nocturnal sharks, but they seem to adapt really well. If you look at the eyes on those sharks, you can tell that's not an eye that's made to swim around at noon. That on the bamboo, that shark eye is made to protect itself at night, or be wide open or during the day and be wide open at night. But you can adapt them. You can entice them into becoming active during the day with food. And it works.
Yeah.
And our sharks, even when we're not actively feeding them now, they will come out and they will swim around and they will be active.
Yeah, they're out when they see people. They will sleep until people are around and they'll wake up to come and say hello.
Yep. The cat sharks, not so much.
No.
You can wake them up to feed them, but you literally have to wake them up. Like, poke them a couple of times with the food. Or we even got to the point where we would physically reach in and pick the shark up. Not out of the water, but pick it up out of the cave. Morning, time to wake up and eat. You know, give it a little rub on the back.
Time for school.
Mom.
5 minutes.
That's pretty precious.
And this adorable little shark would swim around for a few minutes. You'd jam some food right in front of its face. It would eat and then go back into its cave and go back to sleep. That is the extent of the activity level we achieved with cat sharks.
Yeah.
It is a good point that's part of why, one of the reasons why you don't really want to do sharks in a reef tank or a standard reef tank. You don't want those super bright lights.
Right.
Otherwise, they're not going to come out. They don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is like a super like geeky, like high level, like taxonomic thing. So cat
That's
sharks.
What you're here for.
Yeah. Cat sharks, of the groups of sharks we have talked about and will probably talk about in this entire podcast, this is the group of sharks that are most closely related to great white sharks.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Great white sharks are weird. Really?
Yeah. I'm talking like high level like taxonomy, but like sharks have been around for like 400 million years, so they've had a lot of time to diversify.
Is that a testament to how close great white sharks are to cat sharks or how far away they are from everything else?
A little of both. Like the distance between like great whites and everything else is like probably like 100 million years, whereas with cat sharks, it's like, oh, it's like 60 million years. Oh,
that's nothing. That is a really interesting fun fact.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Like swell sharks are another cat, like they're a specialized type of cat shark, and this is a true cold water shark, and then I'm going to use this to transition into the next group.
Excellent.
So if you want to work with that shark, you need to have a, what's the word I want to use?
A chiller?
But I'm looking for like a, like an adjective for this, like a gigantic chiller.
A big-ass chiller is what you want
to say. You could say big-ass chiller.
It's okay. You're going to need a big-ass chiller for this thing because this is like a 400-gallon tank you're dealing with here.
And a shark that wants 50 to 60-degree water temperature, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As far as cat sharks go, they're probably one of the more like active ones, though.
That makes sense coming from the colder climates, because day and night lengths make a purely nocturnal lifestyle a little less appropriate.
Yep.
Yep.
So that was my transition to, so let's talk about horned sharks.
As we get farther, we're getting farther and farther away from what I know. So right. I'm ready to learn.
Yep. The horned shark, Port Jackson's is probably the most common of the horned sharks.
Yeah, well, the group is more or less called the bullhead sharks because there's a lot of them. There's like 20 of them.
Right.
But horned sharks are probably the one that people talk about the most because they're actually from California.
Okay.
So they're a little bit more readily available, but that also means 50-degree water. And no, you cannot keep them in tropical water. Yes, people do it, but ask that people, like that person, if they still have that shark 5 years from now. They don't.
They'll survive. It just dramatically shortens their lifespan.
Yeah.
What kind of lifespan are we typically thinking? This shark specifically, but sharks in general.
So bonnethead sharks are one of the shortest lived sharks. They have a life expectancy of about 10 years.
Wow.
That's shortest. The Greenland shark currently has the record for the longest documented known, or the oldest documented known living vertebrate at over 400 years.
Wow. Well, those are just like autopilot.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They mature at like 85 years old.
So cool.
Crazy. But I think 25 or 30 is you better plan on a 25 or 30 year old lifespan for.
Yeah, for the epaulets, the bamboos, the horns, the bullheads, cat sharks. They're all around that. Like 15 to 30 year, depending on which species, but these are long-lived animals.
So much more than most of the animals we consider pet animals.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, until you get into like birds and some reptiles.
Right.
Turtles. Right. Tortoises.
But many reef fish are 25-year fish.
Yeah.
Clownfish, angelfish.
Yeah, people don't think about that enough.
Right.
Like our cats and dogs, but you get so much more time to train, to adjust to life, to work with. I mean, that's a blessing that people don't appreciate.
Mm-hmm. I had a lady come in over the weekend and she's had the same pair of clowns for 25 years. And a lot of that conversation was, it's one thing to say a fish can live that long. It's another to say that one person will do that their entire, like that entire time.
The commitment. Yeah.
Yep.
So anyways.
Yeah, that was a tangent, but I think we needed to talk about it a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's very important.
That's part of what makes them such pets, such good pets.
Mm-hmm. They do definitely use that time to get to know you. Like the sharks downstairs definitely recognize individual people and they know who they like and who they don't like.
And it took them years to get to that level. It's not just like you just drop them in and they are what they are. It's a relationship.
They all don't care about me.
Maybe
I just don't spend the time with
them. Yeah, exactly. Right. But it does make a difference.
It does.
Yeah. Like I was the one who was feeding that female for that first like formative time of her life before we added the other sharks. And I don't do anything with her now. And she still likes me. She remembers.
She recognizes you for sure.
And she definitely likes people more than the other sharks.
Yeah, because she was socialized to people before she was socialized to sharks.
The two younger ones, they were introduced to sharks at a younger age and they definitely like each other more than they like us.
Best friends, and she wants nothing to do with either of them. She just wants people. And that like that ability to discern and make those distinctions, it is a testament to their intelligence.
Yeah. Sharks actually have the ability to, like, there's scientific research that, and I'm anthropomorphizing, but even the scientists were kind of like, so sharks have besties. They recognize individuals. They know who they like to hang out with. And like great white sharks are a great example. Female great white sharks, they make their like, so they don't have an annual migration because they have like a 16, 18 month cycle. Mm-hmm. But great white females, they pair off and they make that migration together.
Wow.
And it's the same pair each time.
Yeah.
And that blows my mind because that means that, like, I don't know how that works. Like, because they are roaming the entire Pacific Ocean and then they meet up and then they travel to wherever they're going together. And I'm like, how do they do that?
They just know. I don't know. I think one of the things as we learn more and more about our world is we've come to understand that science can't always be sterile. We need terms like friends and relationships. So anyway, horned sharks is what we're talking about, right?
So I think horned sharks, honestly, of the bullhead sharks are the most doable, because they are actually smaller than the other ones. So like Port Jackson's, that's like a 5-6 foot long shark, whereas a horned shark, that's like 3 foot. So even though you're investing in a chiller, which is not cheap,
right,
it's still cheaper than a tank that's four times, well, volume wise will be 8 times larger.
That's true. Yeah. So really there's not, in that group of bullhead sharks, there's not a great choice.
No.
We're talking big.
Yeah.
Or we're talking cold.
Yes.
Right.
And or.
Yeah, and or. So have you heard of the short-tailed nurse shark?
Yes, that is actually, I think it's in the same family as nurse sharks, but it's a different genus.
That one is really exciting to me because that is one that we see on our captive raised list.
It's right. A newer one into the hobby for sure, because that's actually a deep water shark.
Oh,
so that's
that
why
makes
it
sense.
Wasn't like in the hobby for a long time because they weren't easy to get broodstock for.
It feels like it came out of nowhere, and they look like a mini nurse shark.
They do. So the scientific name is Pseudoganglomastoma brevicaudatum. Pseudoganglomastoma brevicaudatum. So brevicaudatum would be short tail.
Stoma is mouth.
Do you know what...
Gingly, I don't know what that
so
means.
So I was like, so the genus for nurse sharks is Glingostomata.
Okay.
So it's near nurse shark.
Near nurse shark. Right. Near a nurse shark. Right.
Well, then I'm going to look up my prefix dictionary and see if it's in there.
Yeah. And they reach a maximum length of 75 centimeters. So that's just under 3 feet. That makes them size-wise a very appropriate aquarium shark.
Yeah. And from what I've been told, they're pretty easy to work with. I guess I didn't think about rare sharks in this podcast, but care-wise, I would put them probably on par with like a bamboo shark then.
That's what I'm hearing as well. And they're available captive bred. Now, we're not, you know, a lot of the bamboo sharks you can get in the $100 to $200 range retail. The epaulets... those are coming down a bit in the $600 or $700 range.
And I'm throwing this out here now as you're talking about it. Spend that extra money. Those sharks are definitely easier to work with if this is your first shark. And I just they're just fun. But moving on.
Right. The short-tailed nurse shark, we're talking about a $2,500 shark.
Yeah. I think the cheapest.
But available.
But available.
Captive bred.
Yeah. You're definitely not getting that wild caught.
Yeah.
But... frankly, if you were to do a mixed reef with the reef lighting, with the, I mean, mm-hmm. if you were to just do all your money went to like system, big tank, mm-hmm. filtration, two livestock versus giant tank, 3 or 4 really high end lights.
You're going to spend $2,500
coral. Like, yeah. I feel like they would, if we were to add that up, it would probably balance out better than you would think.
I think you're right. I like that way of thinking. It kind of makes me think we should get one.
Because it's one thing or another. You got to make the choice. You can't do a giant mixed reef and a giant shark, mm-hmm. but you could probably do one or the other for the same amount of money.
Give or take, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I've done that math before. It's Have about you? The same.
That's what I would think. I've never really thought that through before, but it falls into place for me.
Yeah. Any other aquarium appropriate sharks we're missing?
I guess this is the point where we can talk about specific like aspects of care. No, you cannot feed them goldfish.
I want to talk about a couple of common species that we see that no one should keep.
And that's a good idea.
And then get into care.
And then get into care. And then if we have more time, we can just talk about sharks and have fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so that's kind of a rundown of the sharks that we know of that are available and make decent aquarium sharks. There are a couple of species that I see on wholesale lists and have seen in aquarium stores before. If you see these sharks, not only don't buy them, but I would say something to the store about ask them why they think it's okay to kill those sharks, because they're gonna.
Yeah.
Smoothhound sharks and leopard sharks. Both of those show up. Both of those are cold water sharks. Both of those are ram.
What's ram. The ram ventilators?
Ram ventilators. Leopard sharks get 12 feet. Smoothhound sharks stay under 5 feet, but
it's, well, leopard sharks are more like 7 feet, but yes.
Yeah.
It's a big fish.
it's big. It's very, very big. And
it's too big.
It's too big. They do not belong in home aquariums. They do not belong in pet stores. There. I said it. Oh, nurse sharks. We see nurse sharks.
Yeah.
Those show up. Regular nurse sharks.
Probably, I don't want to say the most common, but it's hard to say most common because I haven't gotten asked about sharks that much. But the black-tip reef shark, I think, is probably the one that people think they want.
They're the smallest available sharky-looking shark.
Yeah.
Yep. And smallest at about 8 feet.
Yeah.
Maybe 6 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's be generous and say six feet. You know,
yeah.
One that you still can't keep.
Yeah. We had a person call us one day. He was a builder saying, I'm building a house for somebody and they want black-tip reef sharks. And we said, we wouldn't get those for you. Well, we're willing to do whatever it takes. And we said, okay, 75-foot aquarium. Well, no, come on, realistically. And I said, okay, you're right. 75-foot aquarium. Well, maybe I'll take my business elsewhere. I said, I'm not going to get the shark for you.
Yeah,
so,
that's probably, you know, for the best.
And here's why, and you shouldn't either. And I don't know if they walked away from that conversation accepting it. Probably not.
Yeah. For some people, I think only getting a couple years with it is enough.
Yeah.
Buy another one.
Boo.
Yeah. That's what we don't want.
It's like,
want.
You take an animal that can live like 20 years and you're like, oh, I had it for 3 years. I did well. No.
No.
No, you did not. No, you failed. Failure.
Nice. All right. Enough of a tangent.
So, I'm going to get mad.
So now let's get down to some nitty gritty. We touched on tank size a little bit. And I think now we can't generalize on tank size because a Wobie can be in a pretty small tank.
Don't even think about it unless you have a 180.
And
start
to think about it after that. Maybe it's more worthwhile to talk about it in terms of not in gallonage, but in measurements. Because for the sharks, that's definitely what they care about more.
Right.
Realistically, 6 feet long by like two feet.
2 feet, that's the minimum.
That's the minimum.
That I can think of a shark. If we can figure out how to keep a Hasslet's alive, you could go smaller. And maybe like 5 feet for the really small epaulet instead of 6 feet. But
I would love for a rule at least as wide as the animal would get long. And I can say that pretty blanket over any aquarium fish.
Yeah. Yeah. And then probably 2 or 3 times body length.
Yeah.
Length.
Give or take.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But 180, I mean, you could technically go down to something more in the 120 range.
Yeah.
If it was a 6-foot by 2-foot by 18-inch tall.
And we're just talking about display dimensions, not water volume.
Right, not water volume.
Yeah. Because it's like everything we say in this discussion is like caveat, caveat, caveat. Right.
Let's talk about let's remind everyone I mentioned earlier, 1,200-gallon system. 3 sharks, that's about 400 gallons each, and we struggle to keep the nitrates down.
Right.
We are doing large water changes weekly.
We have a massive protein skimmer. We have a refugium. The only other fish in that system is a single clownfish.
Right.
Yeah.
And the grouper.
And the grouper.
But it's not a very big grouper.
No. So know what you're getting into. Those are big, messy fish. They're giant predators. Cut yourself some slack and get more water volume than you think you need.
Speaking of predators, what should we feed our sharks?
Well, let's just start off with no goldfish. Stop asking me that. I'm tired of hearing it. It's never a good food option for anything ever.
Well, the only reason to get big mean fish is so you can feed the mother fish, right?
Yeah. So our sharks here, they get their kind of like base diet is silversides and krill, and then treats, which would include things like ocean perch, Patagonian red shrimp, scallops, clams, depending on what I feel like getting them. If I'm being really nice, I'm a big salmon guy. I'll give them little bite-sized chunks of whatever I'm eating that week. So stuff like that. You're thinking high-end seafood, basically.
Yeah. And variety.
And variety. No one likes eating the same thing every day.
Yeah. Frozen food thawed out in salt water.
Yes.
Yeah. It's never live.
Never live. I don't know that there's any drier pellet foods that I think you could possibly get a shark to eat.
Yeah. I've experimented that a little bit. Ocean Nutrition used to produce a gelatin-based food.
Okay.
That's no longer on the market. And Amy remembers I was testing with that, and I did get them eating that type of diet. So okay. If that's like the type of mixed diet you want to be feeding, that is a viable option. You will be making it yourself. If you want to talk about that process with me in person, I don't feel like doing it here on the podcast personally. Yeah. Come in and ask me.
Yeah, that was a thought I had. I think that as long as it smells like food, they would take it. There's just nothing big enough that exists.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if they would take dried if there was like a big stick that had all the stuff. I don't know, maybe. But it doesn't exist.
They're so tuned into feeding from smell.
Yeah, that maybe they would. But at this point, it's just frozen and that's easy.
It really is easy. And it's nutritionally enough.
It's there.
We got in such an argument earlier this week about frozen where somebody was trying to say, well, there's nothing in that. That's complete. He was feeding shrimp. Live shrimp, and I was showing him krill, and he kept saying, well, it's trash. There's nothing in there. It may as well be water. Like, it's just shrimp that is frozen. It's just the same thing. It's just not alive. And he could not understand that.
I wish I could have been there for that conversation.
It is the same thing. Well, Charles had it, and then I had it, and then the guy stormed out angry.
Oh, so. You forgot the part where Nick had him before I had him.
Oh, yeah. And poor Nick was like, I don't even know what to do with this guy. Anyway, but frozen is fantastic food. It's the same as the live thing. It's just easier and they like it just as much.
Well, and the thing that's really nice about it is it's controllable.
Mm.
As in, you can target feed individual sharks in the system. That's a really big deal because sharks for their size do not eat a lot. That's right. That's part of why they've been around for so long. They're very efficient things. So like the perspective I like to give people is that grouper is probably eating about 50% of his body weight in a week. And that's more or less typical of a predatory fish. Our bamboo sharks, they're probably eating somewhere around like 8 to 12% of their body weight in a week. That's not a lot.
No.
So you got to make that count. And you also have to make sure everyone gets their share.
Mm-hmm.
So like our sharks, they're trained to go to target. So they do like to cheat. But that allows me to be like, all right, it's this shark's turn, and then I use a little skewer and stick it in front of the shark and make sure everyone gets their fair share.
It works.
Target feeding. Charles is talking a little bit about target feeding, and that's you've heard us use the word training. And yes, sharks are very smart and very, very trainable. And that target feeding it's a really cool thing to watch them learn. It's the way public aquariums make sure if they've got a 70,000 gallon shark display, it's the way they make sure all their sharks get fed. So each shark is trained on their individual target. In a big aquarium, that's basically a broomstick with a shape and a colored shape on it. For us, it's various shapes and colors of Tupperware type lids. And it works. And one of the sharks is trained on a red square, one is trained on a blue triangle, and one is trained on a yellow circle. Okay, the little one kind of cheats a little bit.
They all cheat a little bit, but it's because they know that they can steal if they really try to.
We're not quite as regimented as we should be.
Yeah.
They are a little
smart. But they are definitely smart enough to recognize the shape, their shape and their individual color.
And they do like to cheat, though.
Yeah.
It was like that was an idea that we had just kind of chatted about. And with that female, when I tried it originally, I was like, all right, well, let's work with her for a while. I've got to feed her. She's the only shark in the tank, and we may as well play and see what these things are capable of. And I think within 3 days, she had gotten the bump, get the reward.
Yep.
It was because they're just naturally curious. So if you put something new in the tank, they're going to go investigate it. They're going to touch it with their nose because that's how they learn new things. And she got the treat. 3 days. And she realized, oh, when I touch this, I get the treat. And that was it. And she was able to do that from then on, adding more sharks, more shapes. Yeah, cheating is really easy. But in that controlled environment, she got it so fast. It was amazing. It was better than I ever thought it would be.
I know when they do it in public aquariums, they'll train an individual shark on a shape by itself before it's introduced to the big display.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
Also, sharks don't need to be fed very often. A lot of people are like, oh, you got to feed them every day, right? I'm like, no.
Two or three times a week is it.
Yeah. The wobie gets fed once or twice a week because they have a pretty slow metabolism.
And even that's more than our friends at Publix aquariums have told them they do. And
once a month for their ornate wobie.
Wow.
Once a month.
I guess as they get bigger and older, their metabolisms probably slow down a little bit.
No. Yeah. But... And this is a quick rant. That's more or less true for most large predatory fish. They're not really organisms that have, like, you don't succeed every day. Like, even like a lionfish gets fed here every other day instead of every day.
Well, and you can come in and see our fat, happy lionfish.
You use more energy going out to search than you do just sitting and waiting.
Right. Right. All right. So we talked about tank size. We talked about feeding. Let's talk about tank mates.
Yeah.
It's always a fun question with people. You know, oh, yeah, I see you don't got any other fish of them because, you know, that'd be bad, huh?
And then you get to give the, yeah, we just really don't want anything picking on our sharks.
Yeah.
Oh.
The look on people's faces after that is great.
So things like angelfish, butterflies, triggers, things that like to pick at rocks. Aquarium safe sharks are look and act like rocks a lot of the time, so it's a great way to slowly skin your shark.
I've been to public aquariums where they have a big reef tank with just a shark in it, and it's got you can see its little scabs and bites, and it's just natural. So
we had a stingray for a while whose name was Stubby.
Oh,
because it was in the triggerfish. It was in the queen trigger, and that tail on that stingray was
It's too tempting.
Lunch. Yes. So gulping predators are the only appropriate shark tank mates. Even herbivorous reef fish are bad with tangs.
Yeah.
Tangs are herbivores. They'll take some mycetium and put it in, but really what they're doing is they're eating algae. They will pick on sharks.
Pickers.
Yep, pickers.
So what are the gulpers we know? Because we're splitting between pickers and gulpers.
Yeah, gulpers, groupers.
Lionfish.
The squirrelfish was great.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess Genacanthus angels would probably be fine.
Oh, that would be an interesting choice. It's that most Genacanthus angelfish don't get big enough to not be food for the shark.
True.
Right. So if we could successfully raise a Haslett's bamboo shark.
Mm-hmm.
Genacanthus angels would be just fine.
Oh, that would be such a cool tank.
The Haslett's bamboo shark was that big.
Oh,
it was adorable.
So
we kept
cute.
It in a critter keeper. It was adorable. Sorry. Yeah.
So sad.
I know. Moray eels.
Oh yeah.
There are definitely a lot of moray eels that are fine with nurse sharks or with sharks in the aquarium.
It's but you got to get that the timing right where the eel isn't spaghetti and. Yeah. And the shark isn't either, I guess.
That's pretty good. Yeah, you do have to watch that. Just because they're both predators doesn't mean they won't try to eat each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So gulping predator, we define that as something that swallows its prey whole as opposed to taking chunks out of whatever it is that it eats. Triggerfish would be the opposite of a gulping predator. It's still a predator.
Yeah.
But it's going to just go take a bite out of stuff.
Just to see if it can eat it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. For example, the undulated triggerfish, one of its specialized feeding habits is eating the bellies of lionfish. That's one of the main reasons lionfish don't get out of control, where undulated triggerfish are popular, because they will come up to a lionfish with their big, nasty, spiky fins and strike at the bottom and eat its belly.
My instinct was to say good, but that's because lionfish are so invasive right now that I want things to eat them.
Right, but they're invasive in the Caribbean. They belong all over the Pacific.
Oh,
that's where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they need to figure that method out.
Right, exactly. So triggerfish are terrible predators to keep with sharks because they will take chunks out of your sharks.
Yeah.
So there we go.
I think that covers tank mates. I mean, anything that's bigger than, let's say bigger than the width of a shark's mouth, like the smallest angle of it.
Yeah.
If they can swallow it, generally safe.
They will try.
And if they think they might be able to, they will try.
Right.
And I feel a need to point out here that's not something that's unique to sharks. Fish, if they can get it in their mouth, they're going to try at some point.
They will.
Yeah, whether it's a ram cichlid or a shark, if they can fit in their mouth, it's going to. If a neon tetra can fit a baby shrimp in its mouth or an adult shrimp, it will.
It will.
So
that's not a shark thing. That's a fish thing.
That's not... aggression, that is predation, and that's a natural instinct for any animal.
It's so hard of a concept for so many people to grasp that it's predation and aggression are two completely different things.
Yeah.
The most aggressive freshwater fish we keep are herbivores.
Right. African cichlids.
Malawi cichlids.
Well, you got to toss some goldfish in there too so they can eat them. No, but they eat algae.
Right.
And they are nasty. Yeah.
All right, so what about some of the health challenges with sharks?
I can think of a couple. One of them is that sometimes if you're dealing with like wild caught sharks, you can have parasites. Yep. Those are more a matter of treating them as you find them.
Yeah.
Juveniles seem really prone to those underbelly infections.
Underbelly bacterial infections are a thing. And it seems to be during adaptation. Once they're adapted to captive life, they seem to be fine with it. But we've definitely had issue, and the best way to keep a juvenile of any of these kinds of sharks is in a bare bottom tank where there's nothing to, no abrasive things for the belly of the shark.
You were just giving me flashbacks to our little banded bamboo shark in his little bare bottom tank when he came in.
He was so cute.
He was really cute. He was probably only 10 inches long.
Yep, he did great.
He's the growth spurt he's had recently. Anyway, we get so affectionate. It's hard to resist.
Yeah. The other challenge
we had
to fight that
with him.
Yeah, he definitely had it. And some antibiotics cleared it up pretty quickly, pretty easily.
And the bare bottom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And getting him to eat really fast was part of it too.
And that's more or less going to be true with adults too, but as they get thicker skin, they can handle that stuff better. But like a ground up like coral gravel is going to be a no go with any elasmobranch ever.
Right.
Like you just shouldn't be doing that.
Yep. Yeah.
Start them out on bare bottom. Always the way to do it. Getting that initial feeding is sometimes a challenge. You know, sometimes I see on wholesale lists and I've been tempted to try it because it'd be really cool to watch, but you can order shark eggs.
Yeah.
And they're usually white spotted or brown banded bamboo shark eggs.
The mermaid's purse.
Mermaid's purse. Yeah. Getting them to take that first bite can be a challenge. We did find a successful way to do it that worked about 60% of the time. And so I would say we did it with maybe 8 sharks, and 5 of them it worked and 3 of them it didn't. And so getting them to recognize what food is actually a thing with a new shark. So we tried a couple of different things with vitamin B12, and that was definitely the effective method. We tried actually giving the shark a shot of vitamin B12. That we saw the sharks get some interest in food, but then that wound got infected and
yeah, I was going to say, how do you keep an underwater wound is a nightmare of bacteria.
It's tough. And that shark skin is so hard that you really got to get aggressive at trying to get it in there. So then we tried, what if we mix some food with some vitamin B12? And we had some moderate interest in food with that. Then we said, all right, so this vitamin B12 thing, it's all about food, right? So we force fed a shark with about 2 tablespoons. This was a 10-inch shark.
Wow.
2 tablespoons of vitamin B12.
Oof, that's a lot.
So to do that, we filled a syringe. 10 milliliters? Is that about 2 tablespoons? That wasn't 2 tablespoons. It's 10 milliliters.
I bet 10 milliliters would be about 2 tablespoons.
Something like that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was 10 milliliters.
It's a lot, whatever it is. It's right. A full syringe.
And we took some airline tubing, and I actually sanded down the edge of the airline tubing to make it so it was nice rounded corners, no sharp edges. Mm-hmm. And it was about a 3-inch piece of airline tubing on the end of the syringe. And we picked the shark up and we carefully inserted that airline tubing into the, as far down the throat of that shark as we could possibly get it.
Yeah.
You got to get it past the gills because they're capable of closing off their throat so that water just goes out their gills. And you got to get that tubing past their gills. Pushed that plunger and injected that shark with vitamin B12, filled that belly up with vitamin B12 and put it in the tank. And the whole attitude of that shark changed.
Wow.
It all of a sudden went into this patrol mode. Threw some mysa shrimp in the tank and bam, that thing just devoured it.
Wow.
And once it had that feeding response triggered, the next day we put in some more mysa. This is what food is. I like this. I think it's kind of the equivalent of eating like, or drinking an energy drink on an empty stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you just, holy cow, I got to eat. Yeah. I got
to
eat.
Or I'm
now
going to pass out.
Right. Yeah.
So, I will say that now in the days of Amazon, you can get a tube feeding kit that is flexible and safer.
That's basically what this was.
It was, no, it did the job, but airline is a little dangerous.
It was, and that's why we
sanded
it down.
That's what you had. That's what you had.
I would imagine we can get one that's a little smaller diameter.
I'm hesitant to recommend that method because I think it would be really easy to rupture.
You're probably right.
But we do have a tube feeding kit in the store in case you ever need it, by the way. I don't know if you know that, Charles.
I did not know that. That's good to know. Yeah.
So yes, we have successfully force fed a shark and it worked.
Yeah, I believe it. Yep, that's a great method.
Other things to keep in mind, sharks are sometimes prone to goiters. That's an indication of an iodine deficiency. A, start doing more water changes. B, supplement it with iodine.
or feed more krill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I think that covers it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we went over, should you keep sharks in aquariums? Almost everyone should try it. For 25 years.
Hey,
but
if you can afford it and you want to, do it.
They're amazing and they're completely worth it.
It's easier than you would think. Yeah. It's easier than other fish of the same size, most of them.
I would say that's true. Yeah.
Like even freshwater. Yeah. A 2-foot freshwater fish. What 2-foot freshwater fish is better suited to aquarium life than sharks?
Ooh. I might be able to come up with a couple, but
not off the top of your head.
Yeah, and they're not as cool as sharks.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, like maybe there's a 2-foot, a giant gourami. That's the first thing that comes to my head. It might be easier.
Yeah, but I still think a giant gourami needs a bigger tank than a bamboo shark.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Because it's an active swimming fish.
Yeah, right.
A lungfish.
Oh, yeah, lungfish. That's a good one.
Those are not easy to find.
No.
No.
They show up on our list. They've always been tempting, but nobody wants them. Right. And I understand why.
Well, come into the gallery and talk to us about sharks. If you think you're up for the challenge, no, I don't want to say up for the challenge because it's not that challenging.
Yeah, if you think you want to and you can, that's really it.
As fascinated with them as we are, there we go. That's the way to say
it. If you even want to just come in and the feeding schedule roughly works out to, typically if it's happening, it happens every week on Wednesday and Saturdays and then most Mondays.
Or if you're willing to wait and ask really nicely.
Yes. Right. I generally do it around 3 or 4.
Yep. Come in and check them out. They are amazing.
Yeah. We're definitely going to need to get more into this on YouTube. We'll post some discussion on Facebook maybe. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite shark or something like that, but definitely look for where we posted this episode and we'll post a discussion question so we can keep this going.
Yeah.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Just stop in and talk to us.
If anybody's had experience out there with any sharks that we did not talk about, let us know.
Yeah, I would love to hear about it.
I want to hear about other cool sharks that do well in aquariums. Yep. Come visit us. It's lots of fun and let's keep those hands wet.